on maternal psychotic disorders and pediatric health care utilization for Medicaid-insured families in Pennsylvania. And Sarah Cullen is our presenter, and she has her doctorate in social welfare from the School of Social Policy and Practice and in the at the University of Pennsylvania. She is a licensed social worker and has worked in community mental health, substance abuse treatment, and homelessness services settings. And she wants to continue working on policy and clinical interventions to improve the quality of care for families impacted by maternal mental illness. So, Ms. Cullen.
Thank you. So this was actually my dissertation research. I just finished my PhD this summer, and I, you know, have credit to my mentors and advisors here as well. So I was very fortunate to have. I have no financial disclosures. So I'm just going to go over briefly background and significance, talk about my research methods, the results, the implications, and some next steps, and then any questions that anyone has. I thought I would just give a brief overview of psychotic disorders. So psychosis is characterized by disturbance in perception and thought processes. The positive symptoms are those which are sort of more severe and acute, things like delusions and hallucinations, where the negative symptoms are often those that are sort of chronic and disabling, things like deficits in motivation and spontaneity. And prevalence for adults ranges, schizophrenia is 0.3%, lifetime prevalence of any psychotic disorder about 3%. And you can see some of the common diagnoses. And in terms of what's known about mothers with psychotic disorders, they sort of fall in a broader group of mothers with serious mental illnesses. And we know that the majority of women with all serious mental illness and psychotic disorders have children. I think for all mothers, all women with psychiatric disorders is about 2/3 have children, and it's slightly less for women with psychotic disorders, but not by much. They often are parenting only one or two of their children. They have sort of higher rates of involvement in the child welfare system. So their children are often under the age of 5 that they're parenting, and they face significant hardships, poverty, unemployment, high reliance on welfare and disability insurance, inadequate and insecure housing, single parenthood, and few social and parenting supports. So while there's not there's sort of limited research on the relationship between maternal serious mental illness and pediatric healthcare use, there is a wider body of literature on healthcare use by adults with serious mental illness. And even though many of these adults are eligible for free and reduced care through Medicaid, they still use less physical healthcare services and are over-reliant on emergency care services. Experience barriers to accessing care. And in terms of women, they have low rates of primary and preventive care. And even though fertility and childbearing rates are the same as the general population, they have high rates of unplanned pregnancy, insufficient and delayed prenatal care. And in the general population, insufficient and delayed prenatal care are associated with less compliance with preventive pediatric health care. Well, child visits are sort of the cornerstone of preventive pediatric health care. Sorry, that's a mouthful. It's where a physician does the health assessment, administers immunization, screening, surveillance, provides anticipatory guidance around injury and violence prevention, development, nutrition, things like that. And, you know, meeting sort of regular compliance with sort of the guideline recommended care has been associated with decreases in morbidity, mortality, and disability, as well as lower healthcare costs and hospitalizations. But compliance sort of is a wide range depending on the sample you're looking at. And some of the known predictors in the general population of compliance with preventive pediatric healthcare are things like maternal education, maternal age, income, race, family size, marital status, and resources. So why was this topic important? So to date, there's sort of some conflicting evidence on the impact of maternal mental health and pediatric healthcare use. The literature has primarily focus on maternal depression and typically sort of postpartum depression, so a sort of a shorter time period. And there's very little research on maternal psychotic disorders and children's healthcare use. But we also know that there are vulnerabilities associated with maternal mental illness, as we just heard about. They are also at higher rates, at higher risk of mental health and substance abuse problems, have poorer health as children, and higher rates of medical problems and early mortality as adults. So, you know, we know that infancy and early childhood are a crucial developmental period where early prevention, detection, and intervention can go a long way. So in order to frame this relationship between maternal psychotic disorders and pediatric healthcare use, we use the Anderson model of healthcare use for vulnerable populations. It's sort of a widely used conceptual framework that looks at healthcare use among diverse populations. And it has sort of three sort of factors that impact the use of healthcare service. And it's predisposing characteristics, which are those characteristics that exist prior to the use of healthcare, things like demographics and social structure. Enabling factors are those resources that individual or community level resources that must be there in order for healthcare use to take place. So things like income, social supports, availability of care and insurance, and need is comprised of perceived and objective evaluation of need. So we use this model to frame this relationship and to answer the following research questions. So the first question we just wanted, do mothers with psychotic disorders differ from mothers without on some of the characteristics that are known to influence preventive and emergency pediatric healthcare use in the general population? So these are the predisposing, enabling, and need factors. Are the moms different? To what extent do maternal psychotic disorders impact pediatric healthcare use? And then we thought that psychotic disorders might moderate the relationship between these predisposing enabling need factors and pediatric healthcare use. So we explored that as well. So I'll just briefly run through the hypotheses. We hypothesized that they would be more likely, you know, based on the literature on mothers with serious mental illness, we thought they would be more likely to display some of the negative influences of these predisposing, enabling, and need factors, things like lower education, being unmarried, having more children. Hypothesis two, based on the literature on adults with serious mental illness, we thought that mothers with psychotic disorder would be less likely to meet the recommended guidelines for preventive care and more likely to be reliant on emergency care for their children than mothers without psychotic disorders. And we thought that it would likely moderate the effect of these predisposing, enabling, and need factors on pediatric healthcare use. So it was a secondary data analysis. It was a retrospective cohort analysis of Medicaid claims data from Pennsylvania for over a five-year period from the Center of Mental Health Policy Services and Research from University of Pennsylvania. And we also linked that with birth certificate data from the state so that we could, you know, more adequately match moms and children. So here is sort of just the fleshing out of the model. These are the variables that were used in the analysis. And you can see under enabling, there were both individual and county-level variables, which we derived from the county of birth. In terms of need factors, we also included complex chronic conditions and prematurity as conditions that would necessitate more frequent visits to the doctor. So we included that as well. And so in terms of the dependent variables, so we looked at preventive care, compliance with sort of a modified American Academy of Pediatrics schedule. This is based on the literature. We sort of use a slightly lower threshold. So the AAP recommends 6 well-child visits in the first year, but we looked at 4. We looked at 2 in the second year of life, and then 1 in every year subsequent. We also did look at least 1 visit in the first 2 years of life. For emergency care, we looked at non-acute visits, more than 3 non-acute care, acute, and then high emergency department reliance, which is basically a formula that says how many of your overall visits were in the emergency department, of your overall sort of healthcare visits. Bivariate, multivariate logistic regression models. We used robust standard errors to control for some of the nested effects because mothers could be in there with more than one child. We also use interaction term to test for moderation. And I was lucky enough to learn multiple imputation techniques to deal with all the missing data, which is, you know, common in administrative data. This is just sort of a broad overview of how we derived the sample. And the final sample was 296,866 mother-child dyads, of which 0.6% were mothers with a psychotic disorder. So the results, as we sort of had expected, there were significant differences between mothers with and without psychotic disorders on many of the predisposing, enabling, and need factors. So mothers with psychotic disorders were significantly more likely to be older, have less than have high school education, have more children, have a substance use disorder, and but they were more likely to maintain continuous Medicaid eligibility, and we defined continuous eligibility as 10 out of 12 months of the year. And as far as new factors, they were more likely to have children with complex chronic conditions and to be premature. So there were some significant differences here. There were fewer significant differences in terms of looking at preventive care. They looked pretty similar to their well counterparts. They were actually more likely to have had at least one well-child visit in the first year of life, and slightly less likely when their child was ages 3 to 4. So, but overall, they did similarly. There were some more differences when we looked at emergency care. Mothers with psychotic disorders were more likely to have high emergency department reliance in the first 2 years of life. So that was one difference. And then of the many, many sort of permutations of this maternal psychotic disorder and all these predisposing, there were a few that were significant, but only for a few variables, so it didn't seem to be sort of an overwhelming moderator in terms of looking at these variables. So what did we learn? We learned, mothers with psychotic disorders, similar to mothers with serious mental illnesses and sort of concurrent with that body of literature, they face significant hardships. They have lower level education, have more children, are unmarried, and they have higher rates of co-occurring substance use disorders and sort of secondary mental health diagnoses. They also, while they had higher rates of eligibility, of the continuous Medicaid eligibility, still only less than half of their kids ages 3 to 4 maintain continuous eligibility. So that's, in terms of thinking about supports and services, helping all mothers with Medicaid maintain their eligibility, but also targeting mothers with psychotic disorders as well, and the fact that they had higher rates of children with complex chronic conditions and prematurity, highlights another point sort of to intervene, but also to understand sort of, what coping and supports are needed for a family that has a mom with a mental illness and then a child with a specialty healthcare need as well. It looks like mothers with psychotic disorders are sort of holding their own when you look at preventive care. They were doing just about as well as moms without a psychotic disorder. They did have high reliance on emergency department care, so that is an area that needs to be addressed with these moms. And overall, regardless of mental health status, Medicaid-eligible families in Pennsylvania sort of had subpar compliance with preventive care. I don't know if you saw, it was like the highest, I think, was when they were 0 to 1. It was in like the 30th percentile. So it's still, have a long way to go. So strategies to promote office-based well and sick child care and sort of take the emphasis off relying on the emergency department could go a long way in getting the family the care they need and also sort of reducing the burden on the emergency department system. Of course, with every study, there's limitations. It was one state, one type of insurance. As I mentioned, we use multiple imputation techniques, but there is, there's missing data and administrative data. There's just kind of no way around that. It doesn't answer the question of who is actually taking the child to the doctor, and I know you had raised that issue about networks we excluded families who had, more than half of the year in foster care, but among like informal kinship networks of grandparents and aunts, we don't know, as claims data, all you know is the child went to the doctor, you don't know who brought them. So that's sort of a limitation in terms of understanding how these families are doing as well as they are, or where sort of to intervene. It also doesn't get at the quality of care. Just because a child goes to the doctor, it doesn't say whether, you know, quality of care is different based on maternal mental health status, or sort of what happens inside the office visit. And then, as anyone who works with claims data knows, always the issue of sort of encounter or shadow claims in a managed care environment. You can't always depend on the fact that all of the claims are being reported. But we did try to address this by controlling for the type of Medicaid, whether it was managed care, fee-for-service, or both. And we did a sub-analysis looking only at people who had fee-for-service, and there still was no difference between the groups. So we felt fairly confident that the finding would hold true. So some of the next steps are sort of, you know, trying to address this issue about the shadow claims, maybe linking with immunization registry and looking at immunizations as a sort of a marker also of to show the kids are getting the care that they need. And some qualitative work around trying to get at some of these issues of caregiving and who is sort of, you know, taking the kids to the doctor and who is sort of stepping up as parenting, or is it the parent? We just don't know. And then, again, the quality of care issues. Are they experiencing differential treatment based on their maternal mental health status at the doctor's office? And, you know, the goal is to sort of pursue research interventions that improve the short and long-term psychosocial outcomes for children and mothers with mental illness. And, you know, in sort of a public health arena, like also looking at systems and, you know, sort of these fractured systems that we have. We have the, you know, child health system, the adult health system, the adult mental health system, and sort of trying to think about ways of treating families as opposed to treating individuals, I think is, you know, sort of an important next step in public health, because I couldn't resist the little comic. There are benefits to early investment. Thank you.
Again, since we only have three presenters instead of four, we have some time for questions.
Hi.
Were you able to look at when the mother was diagnosed and also whether or not they're medicated?
Please repeat the question.
So the question was, were we able to look at when the mother was diagnosed, and the second part was whether they were medication compliant. So the first part, yes. We included mothers who had been diagnosed either 6 months before the birth up through the first year of life. And then we excluded, so that was like the sort of the sample of case mothers. And then the comparisons were anyone that, you couldn't have had a diagnosis even when your child was 3 or 4 of a psychotic disorder or any other sort of major mental illness. The sample was bigger if you took anyone who had a psychotic disorder at any point, but we thought it was sort of not that fair to, you know, look at someone who had a psychotic disorder here and look at their health care here. So, and we did not look at the medication. That sort of would be another next step in seeing what a difference. I did do a sub-analysis of looking at the moms with psychotic disorders who had treatment and not treatment, looking mostly at like sort of stabilizing services like therapy or case management or medication. And it did seem to make a difference. So moms who had at least one visit were more compliant with healthcare, with their kids' healthcare, than moms who had not had any treatment. So, if that helps. Any other?
Just as a side note, that struck me that the mother was taking those medications during pregnancy. Mm-hmm. The medications would severely hurt the child. Just a thought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's a hard thing to
have to face. Yeah. Yeah, that's true. But yeah, it's a complicated issue.
Could you speak up a little bit?
No, I'm just saying. There's a lot of ongoing longitudinal studies looking at the outcomes of SSRI.
Oh, okay.
And for anybody who has clinical care, there are hotlines, the OTIS hotlines, teratogenic hotlines, in 27 states out of the 50 in the United States, where a woman can call up and get empirically based counseling on the risk of medications that she's taking. And in general, the risk of mental health medications much lower than
they're
a little bit suicidal,
right.
Than committing suicide.
So
we're talking about pretty serious medical.
Yeah, it's a mix.
Change, yeah. Things in your body, in addition to the body, of person.
Right.
So just a side note in terms of thinking about, you know,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a complicated issue because then the research also shows that women who are depressed, who don't take their medication, their children don't have good outcomes too. So it's a hard one. It's a hard issue. Any other? Sure. My background is in sort of the mental health system. I mean, I think, you know, targeting interventions in a mental health setting, I think sort of what led me down this road is that when I worked in mental health settings, I saw how little attention was paid to women's roles as mothers. And sort of, you know, sort of a systems change of thinking about people as, you know, their system, their family system, as, and just not just like the individual. And, you know, simple things like, you know, helping mothers even make the appointments, like, you know, helping them get their case management. I mean, that's what they're geared for in terms of their own care, but thinking about providing care for the whole family. So I think that could go a long way. And then, you know, that's a small, and then even bigger systems, more systems integration, this whole sort of, you know, physical and mental health system integration idea, I think, could go a long way, too, for families who have, you know, these kind of issues, so...
So now in California, they have wraparound services for families that address many of these issues, really a multidisciplinary team across, not just in mental health, but across various social services that would help the family intervening. They left a person's homeless. If the mother's homeless, it's a whole different thing, a whole different category of supports that they need.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people that are homeless have a real stake in staying that way. So it's really quite a challenging thing. I don't understand how that. I was
surprised. That's encouraging to hear that they're starting to. I'm in Pennsylvania.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we'll continue with the next presentation, and then there'll be time for questions afterwards.